Good evening, everybody. This is John Adolfi. Welcome to one of our monthly events here at Adolfi Real Estate. And it is March 21st, 2017 at 7 o'clock. And we've got a room full of people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for making it sound like a room full of people. And tonight we're going to be, our topic tonight is the 17 ways to finance your property. And may I say this as an introduction? Out of all the wannabes and actual bees and hope to bees and, you know, have beens as far as people who are looking to invest in property, this seems to be the number one reason why somebody doesn't get investment property, and that is, I just don't have the money. They've read the books, they've watched a television show or two, they get the fever, and then they don't know what to do as far as about the financing. I want to say something about the seminars that you will find. Every once in a while, you'll see them advertised here in Syracuse. If you do go to them, please understand a couple of things are going to happen. Number one, you're going to immediately bond with the speakers, and most likely you're going to like them. You're going to like what they have to say. You're either going to pay $97 free or something small introductory. You're going to go there for anywhere between 1 day to three or 2 or 3 days, depending on which program they have going on. And then you are going to most likely, after spending all that time with them, feel that it justifies to go to the next level. The next level being $2,000-$3,000 level. Or maybe it's the $300 level. I don't know. Everyone has their different way of doing it. But it doesn't just stop there. Okay, there's the 10, the 20, the 30, and the $40,000 level after that one's done. By then, you've really built a relationship, a bond with these people of trust. The problem is that a couple of things. Number one, you could have taken that $10, $20, $30, $40,000 and bought your first property. But I know you're probably feeling a little insecure about the whole thing. At some point, they will dangle this golden carrot and say, if you pay the $1,500 and come to our next meeting, you're going to meet angel investors that are dying to give you money to buy property. Unfortunately, and I'm not going to suggest that the people that do these things, that their motives are wrong. I'm just going to say that. Unfortunately, what happens is people who are desperate get taken advantage of, whether it's on purpose or not. I've met those people after the fact. They want to succeed. They're at the end of their retirement, or they've got this seed inside of them of excitement, and they don't have a lot of money. They've got $40,000 in their 401k, and they pull the whole thing out, and they spend it on having one of their representatives come to their city and do a one-on-one for 3 days for $40,000. Plus, I'm sure there's additional coaching via phone. So what happens is they spend the money, they don't secure a property, and then they walk away even worse than they were before. And to me, that's wrong. I just don't like I say, I'm not judging motives, I just don't like that. You know? Okay. So tonight we're going to talk about 17 ways to finance your property. Whether you're a person who's looking to buy a property to live in it or you're an investor, this is going to be for you. Okay? So I know you're going to have to go around. All right. So here we go. The number one reason, or number one way, way number one to finance your property is cash. Yep, and that is, what can you say about cash? When you have cash, you're going to certainly have a lot of ability to make an impression. And you're also going to be able to buy more property with cash than any other type or way of doing it. Cash allows you to be able to buy a HUD home. With ease, it allows you to buy a Fannie Mae foreclosure, HomePath, a Freddie Mac, HomeSteps, a bank foreclosure. It allows you to buy an auction property easily, any property with ease. But these other properties that are what I just named off are your more difficult properties to finance for the home buyer and especially for the investor. What do I mean by that? Well, we'll get into the different ways that an investor can and a homeowner occupant buyer can purchase, but cash is king. And typically, when it comes to HUD homes, I would say 99% of everyone that buys a HUD home that's not going to live in it pays cash for it. Okay? All right. Borrow from a family or friend. Number two, got to have some skin in the game. All right? And if you don't have your own skin in the game, then what people normally do is they ask for, where's the loan sharks out there? I want to get high interest rate loan because I'm going to get rich on real estate. And some people would disagree with this, but borrow from your family or friends. Yeah. Borrow from your family and friends before you go to a lending institution. I know that seems risky because you could estrange relationships. That's the only thing you got to watch out for. If you're a dreamer and you have a history of not doing too well financially, you may want to rethink number two. But if you are a straight shooter, somebody who has a proven track record in little things in life that indicate that you're, I don't want to say a winner, but I'm just saying that you're going to make it happen, then consider your family and friends first before you go and take on any partners that you don't know very well, or you know very well, but they're not really a friend. Go ahead and tap into your family and friends. You know, usually when you tap into your family and friends for a business opportunity, they usually tell you to go away. I don't want to sign up for that skin cream company. I don't want to do that multi-level thing. This is different. This is real estate, okay? So they may be more receptive to that. Especially if you introduce them to a halfway decent realtor, okay? And if you introduce them to a property that no holds barred is just an awesome property. And not pretend awesome, the real deal. Then they'll get it and they'll go, okay, I want to go gold mining with you. You know, that's going to be their attitude. So, all right, as we continue, I want to talk a little bit more about bird dogging, okay? What's a bird dog? Bird dog is somebody that doesn't have any money but has gumption, has fire in their belly. And they're the ones who are going to find that deal and bring it to their angel investor. Let's say it's a friend or a family member. And they're the ones who are going to buy it. And the bird dog gets $500. Bird dogs typically get $500 when you're talking about an investor who knows what they're doing. Then they sometimes, if you do it enough times, they will get you in a little bit further and a little bit further financially. I, as a realtor, don't like working with bird dogs. Here's the reason. I'm talking about that definition of bird dog. Because what they want to do is they want to run you all over town. Okay. They find that beautiful property, that one that's going to do it. Okay. Just to bring in their investor who sticks their chest out and says, no. And they are more insistent and feel more, entitled than any of the other different buyers out there. So only one other type of buyer that acts entitled, and that's those who get a grant. I have found that those two types of buyers, potential buyers, are the most finicky of them all, the most entitled of them all. When you got your own money or your mom's money at stake here, unless there's a disconnect there, perhaps maybe I shouldn't even say that because I've seen people act a little bit weird when they're having their parents buy it too. But there's a strong connection between a responsibility to the individual. Then the bird dog, so to speak, or the person who's going out and looking for the deal is going to act more, I don't know, just differently in a good way. You know, that's my experience. And all right. Number three, hard money private lender. Yeah, you can get, and I should probably increase that percentage, you can get hard money lenders to lend you short term, 6 months to a year, 12 to 16%, even up to 21%, maybe even be higher than that. I think I've heard 25%. All right, there are usury laws, but I think it's approaching 20s, in the 20s or something. I don't know what the actual percentage is, but hard money lenders lend, and they don't typically lend to non-investors. The reason is that the SEC would require them to have a license. And that's how they, not get around it, but that's how they conduct business. They only do it with investors, okay? Hard money lending, 12 to 16%. You don't want to do it more than a year anyways, because I've seen people go to Beneficial when Beneficial was around, I don't even know if they are, Home Household Financial, and do these 16% loans on their houses where they had to bail them out somehow, and they got a 16% loan on their house, and then they're in trouble, and it's like, oh, it's pathetic. The amount of money that they're paying each month to the bank was just exorbitant, you know. So you don't want to be in that too long. But you know, a 16% loan for a 6 month flip or something, 6 months to a year, it's fine. I mean, the price of the cost of doing business. And the cost of renting the money, so to speak, is just part of your, you know, part of your cost. And if you're going to make $20,000 and after everything is said and done and the money costs you $2,000 in interest, it's worth it. Cash in your stocks. Ooh, the stock market is doing pretty good, I guess, isn't it? And you can cash in your stocks. And a lot of times what people do is when the stock market stinks and it's tanking, that's when they go, oh, I'm not making any money and I can't put it in the bank. I'm going to go buy some real estate. And I've seen them liquidate it. I've seen them liquidate their stocks. Not very often, but they'll do that. Take on a money person as a partner. Now, this is different from your friend or your family member. This is like meeting somebody or looking for somebody. You're out there marketing yourself and looking for that money person, or you hang around these real estate events and you're looking for that money person. But take on a money person as a partner. Here's how you can, and I believe you should operate to encourage and to give your money partner, money person partner, as good a feeling they can about you, and that is that you're going to do what they can't do. You're going to find the realtor, you're going to find the resources, you're going to find a way of finding the property, and you're going to respect the realtor's time. Don't run them around like a crazy man. If the realtor says, I need to talk to your money person, then have them talk to the money person. I like to talk to the money person. I like to know who I'm doing business with. I like to know who's writing the check. It's only reasonable. But don't get an attitude if the realtor wants to like talk to the money person. Like they're going around you, they're disrespecting you. It's not about that. And if you are more than just some yahoo running around, you know, making appointments, and are actually doing things and are learning how to do this well, then you don't have to worry about anybody going around you, because you'll be a necessary part of the whole transaction and will be respected as such by not only the realtor, but also the family member or the money person partner. And what do people usually do? This is what they do. They'll say, look, I'm buying a house for $40,000. It's going to cost $10,000 to fix up. I'll do all the work. Okay? And then when everything is said and done, we split the proceeds 50-50. That's what they'll do. I've seen them do over quite a few times. So you buy it for $50,000, put $10,000 into it, you sell it for $100,000, you make $40,000, you split it 50-50. He or she doesn't lift a hammer, and the other person found the property, you know, coordinated everything with the realtor and everything, saw it to closing, grabbed the keys, fixed it up, listed it with a realtor and got it resold, or sold it themselves, made the profit, the money person got half. That's how. Now, it's not to say that you have to do it that way, but that's what I've seen people do. Cash in bonds. I don't even know if anybody has bonds anymore. But if you did, savings bonds, that would be a good time to cash them in and buy some real estate. What I'm trying to do is trying to generate some thoughts in respect to what can we do. It's like, I don't have this. Okay, what do you have? What can you do with what you have? You know? And so this is just to stimulate some thinking. So of course most people aren't going to have bonds. Owner financing. Let's talk about owner financing. Owner financing is awesome. But you also got to watch out what type of owner financing that you're doing. I have a whole seminar on owner financing. And let me just say this. There's a lease option agreement. There's a land contract. And then there's where the owner actually transfers the deed in your name and just becomes the bank. Now, for you, the buyer, that's the best one to do. If you can get the owner to transfer the deed into your name, and all they are is the bank to you, that's the best for you as the buyer. They may not want to do that. And here's the reason why. It costs up to $5,000 to do a foreclosure on you if you do that. Now, if you've got a good real estate attorney and could talk to the real estate attorney and say, hey, is there any way that I can protect myself and my deed that I'm going to have transferred in my, but make it really easy for him if he needs to foreclose so it wouldn't cost him $5,000? Is there any way we can do that? And I think there are some solutions. I just don't have it. I know that there's one where they take the deed and put it in escrow. But again, talk to somebody and make it easy for the individual to do that. Because here's the problem. If you decide to go with a land contract, okay? Land contract, the deed does not pass. It stays in the original owner's name. You have equity in it, okay? And you have an interest in it, equity-wise, money-wise, and a judge would, if it went to court, a judge would recognize that as a degree of ownership. However, it's not in your name. Here's the worst-case scenario. You're living in it, you're paying money on it, and all of a sudden, you get a notice on your door. It's gone into foreclosure. And if it's not redeemed, which it probably won't be, they'll go ahead and foreclose on it, and you will lose all that money. The down payment, and all those payments that you paid, and as you watched your mortgage come down a little bit at a time every month, doesn't matter if it's 5 years, 10 years, you lost all your money on the house. That's why land contracts aren't really that great for the buyer. But they can be great for the buyer because it may be the difference between getting the property or not. Because let's say you just can't do it any other way. I know somebody that bought four houses. I'm not saying he's being real successful at it, but he bought four houses with no money down with land contracts. He found the right person at the right time to do this. Okay. Lease option agreement. What is a lease option? A lease option is just that. It's a lease, which is a rental, and then there's an option. And all that means is that there's an opportunity to purchase. The lease, let's say it's $800 a month, is $800 a month. So you're going to move into it and you're going to rent it for $800 a month. Great. What's going to prevent the owner from selling it to somebody else? Well, first off, you got a lease that's going to go one full year. But just because you got a lease doesn't mean that the owner couldn't sell it unless you have an option in place. Because if the owner has got it leased out and it's got a lease in place, a one-year lease, and next month they sell it, well, the new owner gets it. But they got to keep you in there for 11 more months. Then they can kick you out. That's how it works. But if you want to buy it eventually in 1 to 2 years, you can do what they call a lease option. So you lease it for $800 a month, okay? Renewable every year for 2 years, okay? And then the option is what prevents anybody from doing anything other than perhaps sell it to the buyer or the renter at some future point. But the renter has to pay an option on it. You just can't get an option for free. So, for instance, John, I'm going to sell you my house. $800 a month, you're going to lease it. And the option is $5,000 every year for 2 years. I'm going to sell it to you for $80,000. So John says, okay. He hands me $800 for the rent for the first month, hands me a security deposit of $800, and then hands me a check for $5,000. Okay? You move in. Now you've got $6,600 invested. The rent and the security deposit, that's typical, okay, of a rental situation. If you don't end up buying it, you get your security deposit back if you haven't beat it up. The $5,000 option agreement just prevents me from selling the house. It's you have first right of refusal. And after 1 year or any time during that year, you can go ahead and purchase the house for me for $80,000. Minus $5,000. Now, let's say you go 2 years. You want to go a second year, John? Great, give me another $5,000. John gives me another $5,000. Now, if he ever buys it anytime during that second year, it's not 80, it's now 70 he owes me. So those option payments get taken off the mortgage. Now, let's say after 2 years of paying me rent every single month for 2 years, so you got about $18,000 in rent and $10,000 in options that you've done to hold the property, you walk away. You lose all that. Yeah. That's the incentive for the buyer to buy, so that this owner can tie up whatever money he has into it so that he can sell it. All right. So it's like almost like a delayed sale with a rent and some incentives along the way. That's the lease option. Borrow from annuity. All right. Do you have an annuity? Do you have some sort of investment that's been building? Borrow from it. Borrow from a 401k or a 457 retirement account. Guys do it. Gals do it. They'll take the money out to either supplement what they don't have or for the entire amount, and they'll take it out of their 401k. But please understand, before you even think about doing that, go and find out what the cost is to rent or take that money out. One person told me that he wanted to help his daughter out, and it was going to cost him 20% hit. I've heard 10%. I think I've even heard 0%. And I now just heard 20%. So find out what the hit is first. Then count the cost and figure if it's worth doing. Okay? You can do bank financing and not move into the home. It's going to run you anywhere between, I've got 20 to 25% down, but there are places that will do 15%. All right. So 15% to 25, but typically it's 20, and typically it's 25% down to do bank financing. What does that mean? It means if you're buying a $100,000 house, you've got to come up with $25,000 down plus closing costs. That could be an additional $10,000 or so. Okay? So you've got to come up with $35,000 down in order to buy the house. Now, there's one bank that will do non-owner-occupant, that is investor, 25% down, and you can add in fix-up costs. And you can do the work yourself. There's only one bank in the universe that does that. It's Fulton Savings Bank. And let me tell you something about Fulton Savings Bank. About a year ago, they invited somebody in who completely revamped their mortgage department. And they've added products. I couldn't believe it. They sat down for an hour and explained themselves to me. I was truly amazed at what they had available for owner-occupant and for investor. So you can do a 25% down, add fix-up, do the fix-up yourself. It's a conventional product. And so way number 11 is bank financing for either owner-occupant, but especially for the non-owner-occupant, as we're discussing here tonight. Number 12, cash out the annuity and refinance a primary residence. So, I'm sorry, I said annuity. Cash out the equity and refinance a primary residence. What that means is the house you're currently living in right now, what's your mortgage balance and what's it worth? Is your mortgage balance 20 and it's worth 80? Well, you got $60,000 worth of equity there that you can borrow from. How much of that $60,000, we'll use that as an example. How much of that $60,000 can you borrow? Well, there used to be a time where you could borrow 100% of it, but I think it's right around 90%. So even if it's 85%, what does that mean? If it is 90% and you got $60,000, that means you can pull $54,000 out of your house. They will make you pay off your first mortgage. Okay? So you would get an equity loan of 74, pay off the 20, you would get 54 in your hands, and you don't even have to spend it. You can wait to write a check. Okay? The only thing you got to write a check on for the principal and interest is that 20 that they made you pay off. So you continue on in your mortgage payments. And you can put your taxes and insurance in a home equity line of credit. I've done two, one on this building and one at home. And I love it. And when I get it down to zero, I may just keep it open because I get to pay my taxes and insurance every month instead of having to come up with it, twice a year. A lot of people run into problems when they have to pay their taxes twice a year. It just happens. Not like out of nowhere. It's not like it just happened out of nowhere. But so if there's equity in your home, that's how you get started. That's how you do it. And many people do this. Okay? Number 13, cash out the equity and refinance an investment property. This is what a lot of people don't know. This is one of those like little secrets you get to learn in seminars that you may not have been aware of. And that is that you can get a home equity line of credit on a non-owner occupant property. What does that mean? Say you live on Smith Street and you own a single or two-family house on Jones Road, okay? And you don't have any equity in your house, but you got the property on Jones Road paid free and clear. The problem is you don't live in it, so you don't get the idea that you could go and borrow money on it. But you can. You can either get a mortgage out on it at 75% loan to value, or a home equity line of credit out for up to 75% loan to value. Yes, sir?
On the value of the home, if you buy a part of the home, bought it for $50,000, is that the value that they base it on, or is it the actual...
That's a great, great question, Jim. The question is, when you buy a HUD home for $50,000, is that going to be the value that your bank who does the home equity line of credit, is that what... No. This is what I suggest people do. First off, when you bought a HUD home, most likely, almost 100% of the time, you've purchased something that's got instant equity. Because it looks kind of run down and kind of, and nothing's been turned on for a while, as soon as you close on it and you paid however you paid for it, go turn the water on, get the furnace working, go clean the mirror, clean the windows, rake the yard, put a coat of paint. Make sure that what you're doing, though, is you're not just whitewashing it just for the bank, because you don't want to put that effort into it. But just clean it up as far as you can. Invite the bank in. So that $50,000 property is probably worth, let me be conservative, 60 now. Maybe probably 70. Maybe more. Okay? And that's what they're going to base the equity on. Yeah. So what's really cool is, so you buy if you buy an investment property that you're not going to live in for $50,000, clean it up, it's worth $70,000. You do a 75% loan to value equity draw out of it, you're now going to draw a little over $50,000, $51,000. And now you can pay your angel investor back, your hard money lender back, your parents back, your friend, your partner, whoever it is, you can pay them back. All right, and then you've got an equity loan on the house now that you don't live in, and then maybe you can go and get yourself a Home Depot card and start buying some materials and start fixing it up. And then you're going to even improve the equity even that much more. Okay, that's how you do it. That's how you do it in the beginning when you get as you're getting started.
Yeah. What kind of financial institutions are you aware of that?
Ha! Great question. Who does a cash out refi or home equity line of credit on a non-owner occupant or investment property? I'm glad you asked. There is a couple places that do it. I'm going to give you a person's name and a phone number. He's the first one that introduced me to this product, and that is Peter Bostwick. Peter Bostwick, Bostwick. He's with Blackthorn Funding, and I'll even give you his number, 426-1601, 426-1601. Many of the other banks do it too. Start with your bank. If you don't call Peter, start with your bank and try just to see how they do. If not, go to the Pathfinder, Fulton Savings Bank, Seneca Savings Bank, and try them and see about that. Now, Peter told me something even way cooler than that. He said, we can daisy chain or do a blanket on more than one property. So, Vince, let's say you have four properties with $20,000 equity in each one. You've got mortgages on them all, okay? But you got $20,000 with equity. You can get an equity loan of 75% times $80,000. One loan, blanketing all four properties. And the interest rate, before you ask, is like in the fives, somewhere in the fives. Could be six, somewhere in there. That's really awesome. Really, it is. To do a blanket? Credit cards. I had somebody come in here, and I can't begin to tell you how to deal with credit cards. There is a technique in doing buying your home with credit cards. Yeah, we did do a seminar on it, didn't we? And it's somewhere. I think it's somewhere on my website. If not, I'll see if I can't dig it up. But you can buy a house with credit cards. It's tricky. You may want to go online and see how it's done, but I just wanted to bring that to your attention. If you look really good at the credit card company and credit card companies love you and they give you high balances and stuff like that and they give send you those checks to just write out checks and stuff, you can take advantage of it and buy a house with 0% interest for like 18 months or something or a year. Just be careful, okay? But credit cards are another way. Again, this is just to stimulate a little bit of thought as to what the possibilities are. Okay, that's 14. 15. I love this one. Especially you young people. There's young people here this evening, by the way, folks. And I've had a couple of people do this. I think, have we talked about this? About buying the two-family? Okay, so what you can do is you can buy a two-family home. Okay? Live in one side. Let the rent pay for most of the mortgage or all the mortgage. Wow, what a concept. How come nobody's ever thought about that? Well, they did back in the 80s. And then Reagan came in 1986 with some sort of tax thing that crushed. It was when you make, you know, when you make a profit and you have to pay capital gains, that's what happened. What investors were doing is they were buying two families and they were flipping them. Flipping them. I know this doesn't have to do with owner-occupants. But at that same time, owner-occupants were living in them. They were living in the houses and buying them and letting the other side pay the mortgage. And then everybody got really like, I don't want to do that. I want my own home and I want it now and I want a large home in Radisson and I want it first time out. You know, it's almost like they wanted it all and they didn't want to, you know, experience any hardships of having anybody next door to you, you know. And so this, in 2014, that was 1986, 87, 88. Right around 1990, nobody talked about it. For 24 years, nobody ever asked me about it, for the most part. In 2014, all of a sudden, it started to become fashionable again for some reason. But here's how you do it. You buy a two-family with an FHA loan with 3.5% down, 6% seller concession. You can get into the house for maybe $4,000 to $6,000, total out-of-pocket. You live in it a year. Now, you gotta have 75. You gotta have 25% equity to do. No. If only if you do two FHAs. Okay. Just be prepared and just ask the bank if you went and got a conventional mortgage afterwards. Do you need 75% loan to? Do you have to have 25% equity in your house? I know if you do it with two FHA loans in a row, you have to have 25% equity in the house that you had bought previously. With a conventional mortgage as your second mortgage, you may not have to. Just make a note of that and just ask. So, what's the big deal, John? Well, the big deal is that you just went from a two-family and you got to go to a single-family. Now, I'm sorry, I don't want to get you confused. Here's the problem. I live in a house right now, and if I wanted to go buy a two-family house, I'd have to put 25% down. If I wanted to buy a single-family house, I'd have to put 25% down. Even if I went to move into it, I'd have to put 25% down because I still own a house with a mortgage on it. That's what they do. They don't want you buying houses at 3.5% to 5% and not living it. But if you step up from a two-family to a single-family, you can buy both properties for 3.5% and 5% down. A lot of people don't know that, but you got to live in it. Yes. You first start off, buy your own home you're going to live in, a two-family, 3.5% or 5% down, okay? Live in it a year, and then start shopping for a single-family that you're going to move into. Because you're going to step up from a two-family to a single-family, they will let you buy your next home with 3.5% or 5% down. Now you've got an investment property that you only had to put $4,000 to $6,000 total out of pocket to close on it. Now you got two renters in there, more than paying for the mortgage. They might be paying both mortgages. What a great way for an investor to start out. It's ingenious. Nobody knows about it. Nobody hardly knows about this. It's not a conspiracy. So you buy it. Okay. So you buy a two-family to live in with FHA. Hold on. Let me just see. Make sure that. Buy a home with a friend to live in. Move to another home. And, yep. So you can do it two ways. You can do the 3.5 FHA and then 5%. Or you buy a two-family living with FHA financing and then buy a single-family home with 3.5% down, 3.5%. So you, in theory, can do two FHA loans with 3.5% down, 6% seller concession. It's hardly any money out of pocket, but your two-family home has to have 25% equity, which means that you've got to get it for a great price. So if that was a HUD home, which you don't see too many of them, two-family HUD homes, but if you did, that's where you'd want to start. FHA, HUD home, they only do 3% seller concession, but nevertheless, okay? And then buy your single family home with FHA financing. Personally, I think that the 3.5% FHA and then the 5% conventional is probably the best way to go on your second purchase. 17. This is one that you'll never hear. Borrow from your whole life insurance policy. Now, this is not term insurance where it costs $20-$25 a month for $250,000 to $500,000 for a 10-year period or 20-year period or whatever that period of time is. That's not whole life. Whole life's more expensive, but it has the component of that you can borrow at some point during the policy's life. You can borrow money from it. I had a gentleman in here. His name is Tom House. Tom House was in here a few years ago. Tom was frustrated. He had three or four houses under his belt. He was a franchised member of Kiyosaki's organization. He would run the game that people played, the cash flow game, and he was, you know, huge into this, but he was frustrated. He was at a point where he didn't know how to get that next step. We had a seminar, and I mentioned this, and he goes, "I got a whole life policy, and it's old, wicked old." And he looked into it, opened up the faucet. Now he's got, I've lost track. He's got 25. He bought 25, another 20 houses within 3 years because of tapping into his whole life insurance policy. So that's number 17. Do I have any bonuses? No, I don't have any bonuses. Just a bonus way of financing. Is there any other way to finance that I didn't mention? Anything that inspired any thoughts from you folks? No, lottery is not a way of purchasing real estate. And yes, of course, a life insurance policy on someone else that just recently passed away is. You know, inheritance is one way to do it. And can I tell you something about inheritance? Many times the reason why people die, people go broke after winning the lottery is because they didn't know how to handle money when they had a little bit of it. So they get a lot of bit of it and they still don't know how to handle it. And it's very catastrophic typically. And I talk to people that get, you know, their dad died in some sort of freak accident. He got some Yahoo kid, 19 years old, gets $150,000. Comes and sees me, it's true. Comes and sees me, and within a very short period of time, he buys a house. He doesn't fare very well with that. He buys a couple of monster trucks, you know, and everybody's after him for money, and next thing you know, and then he comes to me a couple of years later and says, "Man, I wish. I am so..." Whenever I'm on the phone with somebody and they say that they just got a settlement, a whole litany of things just runs through my head. First thing that runs through my head is that I just want to run over there and put my arms around them and their money and say, "I'm going to help you protect it from you and from the outside. People are going to try to rip you off. There's financial planners are going to want you. And there's going to be maybe even rip-off artists out there in the housing industry. And then there's whoever else that may learn about you. You just have to watch it. And your own worst enemy is usually yourself. And they spend it all. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the 401k. Isn't the Roth IRA pretty liquid, too?
Roth IRA, yeah. And I'm not a financial planner, so you just have to just contact them. And yeah, contact them and ask them those questions. You know, it's like, what can I do here? And there's other ways of setting things up, too. Any other questions? We're going to turn the recording off, and we'll have a little gib-gab session here. And I want to thank everyone for listening, and those of you out there that want to contact us, especially those who have had an inheritance. I seriously want to make sure that nothing happens to it, because you need somebody, and I don't want to blow my own horn, but if I was to do that, I would say that I'm honest, and I'm not going to rip you off, and I haven't, and I won't. And I really want to see you succeed, and those of you that have run into the situation where you do get a settlement or whatever, contact me. I'll be happy to discuss it with you. All right, thank you very much. And our number here at the office is 695-6434. Signing off for now. And we will be having another boot camp this March 21st for HUD homes. And it's already filling up, and it may be sold out by the time you listen to this tomorrow. Have a good night. Again, 695-6434.